Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I am officially addicted to Hamilton.
Hamilton, the play?
Yeah, have you watched it? Like, have you seen it on Disney Plus and stuff?
I have not. I have a side story to tell, though, about it at one point. But no, go ahead. I want to hear your Hamilton addiction first.
I think I've watched it like four times, I think, at this point. In the last week?
Do they do it as just like a straight like hour and a half, or do they do a series, or like
it's I've watched it like four times and it's like 3-ish hours or so.
Wow.
Complete with intermission, right?
What do you like about it?
I think it has its issues, right? Like it just kind of like glosses over Thomas Jefferson's slavery thing.
I don't know anything about it, so yeah.
But it's like, you know, it has that as an issue, but just like as somebody who really deeply cares about lyrics and then storytelling within the song and all that stuff, like that's what draws me to folk music and country music, is that I think the lyricists are the best. Lyricists are really good at making it sound like I'm just having a conversation and hearing somebody tell their story, right? And I think here with Hamilton, like just their ability to lyricize this kind of content and make it interesting, like make history interesting, I think is just a legitimate accomplishment. And then the performances, like, My hot Hamilton take is that, like, if anybody other than Lin-Manuel Miranda played Hamilton, it would be, like, legitimately, like, one of the greatest things of all. He's not good enough to carry the role that he assigned himself. But there are, like, you know, the person who plays Aaron Burr is just astounding. I think it's, like, Leslie Odom Jr., if I remember correctly. Hamilton marries Eliza Schuyler, the woman who plays Angelica Schuyler. Like there's and then the guy who plays Washington, George Washington, like there's just incredible. And then the person who plays Thomas Jefferson, and he has another role whose name I'm forgetting. It's just the performances and then the actual lyrics and the music and how much they were able to do with so little, because it's very minimalist stage, you know, there's not very many things in terms of props, and just like the way it all came together, I can't stop watching it. And then it's kind of nice because Avery loves it, so like she likes all the music, so I have an excuse to play it during the day.
Nice.
Yeah. What's your story?
Did you ever see In the Heights?
Mm-mm.
In the Heights was Lin-Manuel Miranda's first like breakout. Playing at one, and I'm not really big into theater. Like I've been to some that I have really enjoyed. Maybe it's something I would like more if I did it more. But my ex bought the soundtrack, would play it in the car. I'm like, yo, what's this? This is fucking, I love this, right?
Yeah.
And the premise of the show, like the setting, is Washington Heights in New York, and so my dad's side of the family is from Brooklyn, New York, and just like the stories of the accents, he's like Puerto Rican, right? And so being a half Puerto Rican kid growing up in LA, like I didn't know many other Puerto Ricans. Uh-huh. Right. That was one thing that was a trip about going to, just because, you know, it's like culturally, like there's an islandness to us with our arroz con pollo and our pollo guisados and all, like, it's just a different flavor. Right. And, but I didn't grow up and I didn't know anybody other than my family. Right. Yeah. And very few of them lived in LA. Most of them were up north. Right. So there's this like side of my family and of my culture that I did not grow up around a lot of peers like who have the same type of background as me. And so whenever I see Puerto Rican culture specifically represented in art, it's just like, oh shit, like, bro, I went to New York and we're walking down the street. Where were we? I don't even remember where we were. We were in Manhattan somewhere, but like I heard people talking. And I like whipped my it around because it struck me. Like, I've only heard my family talk like that. Like, and it just, everybody talks with their hands, right? It's a, and you know how I am, right? I'm very expressive when we do this. But there's just like a certain vibe to it that I'd never experienced walking down the street, hearing, like, it was probably like six teenage kids that were all Puerto Rican, right? That just had like, they just have a vibe to them that I was like, oh shit, that's like my family, right? And so, anyway, wow, I'm making this way longer story, I'm giving way too many details. So my ex lived in the Heights. I started listening to it and I loved the soundtrack. So they rolled into town with Lin-Manuel Miranda playing the Usnavi, the title character, right? Mm-hmm. And usually when they go on tour, it's not like the main dude. But this time around, they're coming to LA. It's fucking Lin-Manuel Miranda as the main guy, not the touring company. They had like all just like super legit people. And so I'm like, man, I'm getting fucking front row tickets to this, right? Like, that's the thing, you know, you get for your girl, like, obvious, like, let's go do this. She would love this.
Yeah.
And so, so we go to it. We got like front row tickets at the Pantages Theater or something like that.
Yeah.
And this was like we didn't have a lot of money, so this was like the night out for the year, basically, like the biggest night out, right, for us. So, so we got the front row tickets, and we struck up, it's somewhere in an intermission, we struck up a conversation with one of the cast members. And he was like a site. He was one of the ensemble guys, right? But we just like really hit it off with this dude, and he invited us to this after party where they did a thing. Actually, no, I'm mixing up stories here. Because that happened a week later. Yeah, so we get invited to the after party.
You get invited to so many after parties that it's hard to like really kind of.
No. Okay, no, this is what happened. I'm sorry. This is one of those stories I haven't told in a while. So fuck, go
for it.
Yeah, so we go to the. We went to the after party, mingled and whatever, right? And Lin-Manuel Miranda was drunk and like. He was like fucked up, and we started talking to him, right? And he was just cracking me up, right? Because he was just this drunk Puerto Rican dude, right? And like I was like, oh shit, man, you could be my cousin, right? Like, and they end up doing a show a week later. This is what happened, that we got invited to. Like, we had to pay, but it was also like invite only, and it was called Guilty Pleasures, and it was at the Vermont Bar or something like that, which holds like 50 to 100 people maybe. And we get invited to this, but and it's all of these Broadway talents, right, in this, you know, little bar.
Yeah.
And so everyone's fucking singing there, like it's this amazing show, and they're doing it as a fundraiser, you know, for some hospital back in Puerto Rico. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is there, and he's also having a good time, right? He's, you know, feeling no pain. He goes on near the end of this, and he makes everyone like put their phones in these little buckets and whatnot. And he's like, yo, I'm working on this. I've got this idea. It's so funny. I just remember what I said at the end of this too. I'm working on this play about,
I'm not Tom. Sure it's going to be good, but
right. Yeah. Say. I'm working on this. I'm writing this, like, it's going to be like hip hop, like rap about Hamilton. And he kind of explained a little bit about it. And these are some of like the first songs I'm kind of working on. Right. Mm. And so it's like, he played like three songs, just him and a piano of just him, like in the creative process, right.
Yeah.
In the creative process of writing what turned out to be this huge hit.
Yeah.
And I remember, we have this great old time. We hear all these people. And I remember walking out with my ex, and we're walking. And I'm like, that's the stupidest fucking idea I've ever heard. Like, that's never going to work. Oops.
Best of luck, man.
Yeah, man. I'm like, I was just like, hey, man, I lived in the Heights. Like, you know, you're my boy. You just, this is it for you, though, man. Like, you had to capitalize on that opportunity because you're Puerto Rican, man. They ain't going to give you another shot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Good for Lin-Manuel Miranda. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably a good thing you stuck to basketball takes and not. Yeah.
And I don't think a theater critic is in my future. No.
Locked on theater, theater film room wouldn't have done as well. That's a great story, bro. That's incredible. All right, we had not planned on talking about Hamilton for the entirety of the first segment, but we are going to take a quick second. The Lakers do have obviously some really big news here, in that they are going to be without Rajon Rondo for upwards of a month, maybe even more. So let's take a quick second. We'll talk about the way that that impacts the team. Did you tell him that? Like, did you tell him, like,
No.
He was just, like, walking out.
Right. This dude who's just, like, the biggest star of the show, right? Like, he plays his first songs, and I'm going to be like, boo! It's fucking trash! Like, no, man. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, we're walking out. I'm not, like, you know, nobody else is around. I'm like,
yeah.
This is the stupidest fucking idea I've ever heard.
Dumbest idea I've ever heard. Oh man, I hope like it'd have been great if he was like accepting like his, because I think he won a Pulitzer, right? He won a Pulitzer for like the writing on that show, and it'd be great as he's like accepting he's accepting his trophy. He's like, and that fucking Puerto Rican bastard who told me I don't have a chance at this, thank you for no.
Yeah, like I'm like in his Jordan acceptance speech. I'm that guy. I'm that random guy at that bar one night.
Yeah.
And you're never
going to. Random dude who is booing me for some reason. Yeah, oh, man. All right. So let's talk about Rajon Rondo. Look, I want to start here because of how much crap I talk on Rondo, and because of, you know, my analysis of his game, you know, an approach to basketball. There are a lot of people who might have thought over the weekend that, like, I was happy to find out this news, right? I am not. Mm-hmm. You know, as somebody who is literally, I am wearing a brace on my hand right now with problems in my hand, and it is just, it's debilitating, it's depressing. Like, I wouldn't ask this kind of injury on anybody. Now,
bro, especially, man, yeah.
Yeah, just, no, in general, just in general, wishing injury on people is just, it's a shitty way to be a fan, but, you know, and be a person, really. Like, you don't want to wish that on anybody. So to be absolutely clear, I am in no way happy that Rajon Rondo is hurt.
You are disclaiming, my friend. This is, it sounds like a disclaimer for about what you're about to say.
But the Lakers are better off. Mm. You know, the thing that I was always nervous about with Rondo, we even went back before they even signed him or re-signed him, right, was that the Lakers were going to be unable to understand the role that Rajon Rondo can fill, right, at this mm-hmm. stage of his career. And I think to this point, that concern has been proven true, right? And if they had used Rondo as, like, you know, a third string point guard who came in, ran the offense in the minutes that LeBron was off the court, and just kept him, you know, made the game as easy as possible so that Rondo can help the team in that regard, then yeah, this would be a hell of a loss, right? But because they didn't do that, and those minutes are going to go to a better player now, I can't help but feel like the Lakers are in a better spot without him. Not to say that I'm happy, not to say that, you know, anything about that. I just think because of the way they used Rajon Rondo, him not being in the rotation will make the Lakers a better overall team.
I think there's an argument to be made for that. Mm-hmm. Couple of things. If I ruled the world, you know, Caruso would be a high 20s, low 30s type mm-hmm. of player in terms of minutes per game, right? He's a guy that I think, you know, now this is something, whenever you scale up, you know, being an 18 minute per game player, you mm-hmm. can expend a certain amount of energy, which is a big part of Caruso's game. Keeping that up for 28 minutes, 32 minutes, that's just a different challenge. It's like,
right,
running a 400 meters versus an 800 meters.
Law of diminishing returns affect literally everything in our world.
Absolutely. So there could just be a point where, you know, what Crusoe gives you in his current minute load, just you're not going to get that in a higher number of minutes. That said, like, Crusoe and KCP have been our best guards this season.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Avery starting and Rondo's role as the backup point guard could get in the way of their minutes and role.
Yeah.
Right. Both guys are going to be low 20s to low, or I'm sorry, high 20s to low 30s players at this point, I would guess. We'll mm-hmm. see, you know, Deion Waiters, we'll talk about that. But either way, their role and their minutes are going to increase. So if the best guys this year are going to be getting the minutes now.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the strongest argument to back your point, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I'm concerned about though, man, is we don't have guys who can dribble the basketball.
Yeah.
Like Rondo and Bradley were probably our second and third best, just dribblers, the ability to dribble on the team.
Handle pressure and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a weakness of KCP's. It's a weakness of Danny Green's.
Even Caruso.
It's a weakness. Caruso's is especially for one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quinn Cook. It's a weakness of Quinn Cook's. So this puts an extraordinary burden on LeBron as a ball handler. He's going to have to play big minutes, and it probably complicates a series with the Clippers, where you got guys who can ball pressure and Patrick Beverley, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George. You know, it's going to be quite a... I'm really interested to see who's going to be dribbling the basketball. Maybe Rondo's back by then, too.
Well, that's the other thing that I'm a little even more nervous about, is that, like, when they get Rondo back, they're going to be in the middle of a playoff run. And in the middle of a playoff run, you're going to try to reintroduce him to that rotation, especially if, like, over the next, like, month or two, we're going to find out that the Lakers are actually better. Like, how does that situation get handled, you know?
Well, and even from a conditioning standpoint, man, like, for Rondo, let's say he gets back in 6 to 8 weeks, it'll have been, what, 5 months since he last played a competitive basketball game, whereas everybody else will have had those 6 to 8 weeks to get up to the point. There's just a massive conditioning and timing discrepancy there too, that would be in even, you know, getting him back. If say they, it goes the other way and they're like, oh crap, we can't dribble the basketball against pressure defenses. And that's a problem. We need that. Right. It's like, we can talk about players and their overall skill set and how good they are as overall players. But sometimes, like baseball, you know how, like, they'll bring in guys who's just like a lefty's job to get a lefty out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you just need to be able to do this
hit.
Right. Right. And just like, we need a guy to do one thing. Yeah. And sometimes that you need that in the playoffs. And that's just the ball handling ability is something I'm concerned about in Rondo's and Bradley's absences, because they're probably 2 and 3 in terms of handling the ball. It probably makes Deion Waiters a lot more important too.
I want to talk about, you know, potential solutions here in the third segment. But before we get to that, I do want to, you know, kind of discuss, well, all right, The minutes were already going to be strung out, right? They were already going to be stretched out for, you know, playoff atmosphere type situations, right? Where LeBron's going to play more, Anthony Davis is going to play more, Anthony Davis is going to be more at the five, right? And so, you know, as that was going to happen, Avery Bradley, had he been there, right, his numbers were probably going to be lengthened as well. KCP also. So, like, my concern was always that, like, as those numbers got stretched, as those minute totals got stretched, Caruso might have found himself on the outside looking in. And, you know, in this case, we now know for a fact, and, like, one of the things, again, I'm not happy that Rondo is hurt, but I'm really excited to see what Alex Caruso is actually capable of in a role like this. We still don't know.
We're about to find out.
Yeah. I mean,
like, either way, good or bad, Caruso's,
you know,
made of.
he might, you know, Caruso might play more and make complete idiots out of all of us who've been begging for more Caruso minutes. He might prove us right, but who knows what that's gonna. I'm just happy to actually get that understanding.
Yeah, right. No, like, so first off, that dude can play.
Absolutely.
He's got a couple holes in his game. He's one of those guys that You know, one of the things that's been nice about the emergence of Crusoe is I love how Lonzo plays basketball. I loved how Jason Kidd played basketball. Magic Johnson was the first basketball player that made an impression on me in terms of like, oh, that's how basketball should be played.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're a little bit younger, like who do you think of when you think of that? Is it Jordan? Like, I would think it would be Jordan in your age, but
probably either Kobe. Kobe was to me like the first one who I would like go out of my way to try to emulate.
That you were like attracted to, right?
Like, yeah, this, like every moment he was on the court, my eyes like found Kobe. Mm-hmm. You know,
of course, yeah. So maybe.
But Magic is a good example too, because they're so different.
When I actually
my answer to this is LeBron. When I started like really kind of when I got past the fact that like screw this guy forever for being better than Kobe, when I finally was able to like get past that and really kind of focus on LeBron, especially in Miami when he still had all that athleticism, right? And you know, he would just do things, and the way that he was very clearly thinking like two steps ahead of the game as that was going on with whatever passes he was making, his skip passing, his passing out of double teams and all of that stuff like that. The way he impacted the game just by walking onto the court was somebody that, you know, I was like, all right, yeah, this is a different dude.
I guess what I'm talking about is more, it's less analytical than that, right? Like, it's just that attraction that like, oh, that's fucking cool. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there are certain styles of player that we have natural like attractions to. Right. Yeah. Right. Like, it just looks cool. Right. On top of it being, it has to be great too. Right. Like, it has to be productive, but that's so Magic was the first for me. Kobe was the other one. Right. Mm-hmm. Shaq had his own. Shaq was like seeing like a Roman god or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he was so physically overwhelming. I feel like he's become a little underrated. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
No, going in different tangents. I like how Alex Crusoe plays. He reminded me of Lonzo, right? And I there's a lot of numbers to back up that, hey, we play better because he does all of this, you know, and it's what infuriates fans of other teams, right? It's because they're like, this motherfucker scores like 5.3 points per game.
Yeah, why are you guys?
What is the big? Why are you so obsessed with this guy?
Is it really just that he's white and bald? Like, is that like that? That's the novelty, but it's not novelty. Yo, it's legitimate it's talent.
It's fantastic that they don't understand. I hope none of y'all tell them, right? Just keep them a little bit pissed off about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, let's not let them in. But yeah, he's so. Him playing those increased minutes, like, oh God, the connection between him and LeBron and AD and just how it all fits together. He can play and he's going to be, he's better when he plays alongside better players. He said this to Jared Dudley in an interview they were just doing an IG live. There are certain guys that are going to, like, he can't guard Russell Westbrook. You just can't. I've watched the tape on that game a couple of times and I'm like, oh, that's kind of bad because Crusoe is like our best guard defender and he's just too small physically. And Westbrook knows how to use his strength and physically overwhelm him.
Especially in the mid-range. It was mean.
Right. So like, I don't want to, we can kind of mythicize Crusoe's game and just the whole character of Crusoe, just all of it's very easy to like, you know, but he can play, right? Like it's both like fun and he's legitimately good, but there are certain scenarios where it's like, yeah, Crusoe's probably not the guy that should be in the game at that point in time. That being said, he's a guy who's continued to get better and has continued to add to his game where like he started showing it feels like so long ago that it's hard to remember, but he started showing like, oh yeah, that was a little pull up off of a ball screen, like of the top, just like pull up, just wah, you know?
Yeah.
And,
where's like, okay. And stuff like that. Like,
And better decisions out of the pick and roll. Right. Really being more aggressive as a scorer. He had a few games with a little 9-point game here, 12-point game there, you know, like, hey, okay. Mm-hmm. And that was becoming more and more frequent. So is that something that's gotten better or worse over quarantine? That I don't know. I just wouldn't count him out to be able to fill this role the way that he needs to. And it's almost forced Vogel's hand, right?
Yeah, it has. I mean, that's, again, it sucks that Rondo got hurt, but on the other hand, it's this, it's going to force the Lakers into this decision that we've been begging for. Like, all I've been saying, I've never said that, like, you know, Caruso would be a star if, you know, he got more minutes. My thing is, like, the fact that we don't know right now feels borderline criminal. You know, the fact that we are sitting here in now year three of Caruso getting NBA minutes, and we still aren't positive what kind of role he could fill if given that optimal role, those optimal minutes. Yeah,
the fact unleash that, the dude, right? Like, let's just see him play, like, 30 minutes a game for like 10 games. Let's see what that looks like.
It's like that scene in Infinity War, right? Where Wanda comes down and wrecks people with her powers. And then I forget the character, but the head of the Black Panthers, like, security team or army or whatever, she turns around, she's like, she's been in there the whole time? You know, what do we, you know, like, I want to get to a point now, and we are really, the Lakers aren't, they have no choice here, really. But I want to get to a point here where we find out one way or the other what Caruso is capable of in a bigger role. And we're going to, that's how this is going to go. Let's take another quick second here. And when we come back, we'll talk about, you know, on top of the conversation here that we just had about Caruso, but other options that Frank Vogel might have to make up for now Avery Bradley and Rajon Rondo's absence. I kind of want to go, like, back through history and just have you see the infancy of, like, some of the greatest plays ever made, and then just, like, get your take on how, like, however much you hate the infancy of that play and, like, what it looks like at its very foundational level, we know that that play is going to be super special, right? So, like, you go back and you see the people who created the Lion King play, and you're like, this just doesn't have a chance. How are you going to do animals in human form? How, like, what's going to go on here? And just see, like, how wrong you could possibly be over the course of theatrical history.
It sounds like you want to produce a show for me, Anthony.
I might. I kind of want to, you know. I'm just going to give you, like, maybe from now on, like, one of our segments is going to be me playing you, like, a 30-second clip of one of the songs from, like, the most successful plays ever, and then you telling me how awful it is, and then me telling you, actually, this one's, like, a shit ton of awards.
Yeah, you might be onto something, man.
All right, so we talked about Caruso. We talked about his role expanding there. Frank Vogel said that KCP was already probably going to start for Avery Bradley because of that absence. But we've kind of alluded to Dion Waiters here. Is there, beyond the conversation we just had here about Caruso and how interested you and I both are to see what it looks like if he has an expanded role, is there anybody else here that you're really, really intrigued by what they might have to do here?
Yeah, all of them. I'm intrigued by all of them. Because this is a broader topic that would be fun to talk about, but this team is basically two super duper stars and a bunch of role players.
Yeah.
And the nature of role players is that they are good for some jobs, but not good for other jobs, right? Like, they kind of have these specialties that Vogel is going to have a lot of interesting choices, because Quinn Cook fits with, like, LeBron and Anthony Davis, because that dude can shoot the ball. He's got holes in his game, but he's got, like, that dude can shoot, right? So he becomes really, you know, great floor spacing option. I've really liked his minutes alongside Dwight Howard. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of situations where Quinn Cook does not make sense. And there, I've got concerns on the defensive end, which is the more pervasive concern, right? But you can, here and there, Vogel's going to be able to find minutes where, like, yo, Quinn Cook was actually really good in that 6-minute stretch. Mm-hmm. And that's really the nature of what Vogel's challenge is to be able to make those right choices of who and where and when, because stylistically the guys are so different, right? So, like, Cook and Caruso are very different types of guards. Then, you know, after Cook, you've got Dion Waiters, right? like conditioning wise, is he going to be able to play big time, like, you know, 10, 12 minutes a game and play defense at the level that we need him to? Is he in good enough shape to be able to do that? That's something that Vogel's alluded to, right? Like, it's talent at the problem. We'll see about conditioning, but he gives a good, you know, scoring guard option, a guy who can score off of ball screens, has a little more size, can spot up. Yeah. Cause Cook is, he's a better ball handler than Cook is. So he probably becomes the second best ball handler on the team now. And so that goes back to that concern that I expressed earlier. So yeah, I'm intrigued by all of them just in different ways.
It's interesting because, you know, when you look at the Western Conference, you don't have, like, most of my concerns throughout the conference and really in basketball in general is how do the Lakers handle wings, right? So, you know, I don't think right now the Lakers are really slated to face off like against Utah, right, where you're concerned what Donovan Mitchell might do to like Quinn Cook or or I think they might see Houston and second, we talked about Russell Westbrook and what he might do to a bad matchup. But beyond that, point guard wise, you know, you have like Patrick Beverley is the Clippers point guard. It's not like you have to go out there and like worry about Patrick Beverley lighting you up. Right. That's that's not the kind of player he is. In Denver, you're obviously a lot more concerned about what Jokic can do from the different, you know, places that they put him to be able to create. You're not as worried about like Gary Harris or, you know, I guess Jamal Murray kind of makes me nervous, but he's more of a two anyway. He's not really who I would be concerned with from the point guard standpoint. And because of that, like, it does make Quinn Cook or even Deion Waiters a little more interesting, right? Because you aren't as concerned on a, you know, over the course of a series that the opposing team, unless you're facing, you know, Utah or Houston, you aren't really worried about the other team's point guard ripping those guys to shreds over the course of a series in like 10, you know, and it's not like I'm telling them, hey, go out there and play 20, 25 minutes, but because of the matchups, will they be less of a disaster than they might normally be, you know, in against, you know, playoff caliber teams?
It depends on how much we're going to need to switch.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see the degree of switchability in the playoffs because there are places where I think defensively you can reduce any concerns you have about Cook, for example, or Deion Waiters from a conditioning standpoint, because he was a solid defender in his younger days anyway. He's got the capability to defend at a decent level. But you've got the concerns with conditioning there. So, you know, that's where you need to be making those determinations. And if you're switching a ton, you can't hide them as much, right? Like you've got, Quinn Cook switched on,
and it's just over.
Right. And it's not just from a one-on-one offense standpoint. It's like, you've got to send more guys back on the boards, or you're going to give up more offensive rebounds when Cook is battling with a Kawhi, with a four or a five, you know? So those are, that's going to determine, I think, their ability to defend.
Yeah, I, you're absolutely right. And now I'm getting images of like Quinn Cook having to guard Luka or something. Makes me a little nervous, but still, when you're talking about like, you know, a stretch of maybe 5 minutes total, can you score more than you're giving up on the other end of the court? Is there more value, even despite the concerns that, or the sacrifices you're going to make defensively, is there more value in degumming the offense in a way that Quinn Cook or Deion Waiters might be able to?
100%. And that's why it's a super interesting question to me about Vogel's, like Vogel has some really interesting decisions to make, because there are going to be sometimes where putting Quinn Cook in the game, is just going to not make any sense and we're going to get hurt by it. There are going to be other times where exactly what you said, we got floor spacing. We, you know, just put up 11 points in 2 minutes, it, you know, just kind of blitzed an opposing second unit. And that you can say exactly that same thing. Like there's a time where it could be great or a time where it could be bad for right. every guard that we have. And so from a coaching standpoint, man, Vogel's got some decisions to make. They're going to have, that are going to have a huge impact on whether or not we win or lose a game.
Absolutely. We'll find out more obviously once we start seeing the Lakers in action, how this might look and the decisions and the ways that, Vogel tweaks his rotation now to make up for now. Like you're basically, he now has to replace essentially like 45 minutes a game, you know, between those two guys or so. And so how he chooses to do that, if it's going to be more situational, you know, like you made the analogy where you have lefty specialists, righty specialists coming out of bullpens, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes those, you know, 7, 8, 9, or well, I guess 6, 7, 8 innings, you know, all the more frustrating because they take longer and now you're going to see less offense because you have better pitchers that are going in for those situational moments. If it's going to be interesting to see if Vogel looks at this completely situationally or if he looks at it from like a, all right, this player is going to make us a more generally better basketball team. We got to give this person the, you know, more opportunity here. However he chooses to do that, and he's going to have a handful of games to be able to figure that out. And it gives us a reason beyond like just being happy to have basketball back. It gives us a real reason to tune in and learn about what the Lakers might look like come playoff time.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast and Locked On Theater podcast in this episode. Yes.
I had fun in this one.
It was fun. Dude, the Lin-Manuel Miranda story is one of my favorite stories of yours.
Oh, yeah? Oh,
was a good one. That was a good one. Because I'm usually the one that's loudly wrong. So it's like, it's kind of nice to see it, man. On the air.
Shit. Lord knows I have my basketball takes that are like, what the fuck? Like, yeah, man, it's part of the game, man.
Exactly. All right. Have a great rest of your day. Pete and I will be back tomorrow to talk more about what the Lakers are going to be doing here. We did get more in terms of some data regarding the bubble that NBA players are playing in and the way some guys are handling that. There was a... like a Postmate sting operation, it looked like, basically. That we'll probably have some fun on as well.
Twitter is there, like bubble Twitter.
Yeah,
that's emerging. Yeah. I don't know if you've caught this in the last few days. Like, there's a bubble Twitter emerging. There's like bubble Woj, and he's fucking hilarious. Oh, I'm just loving this. It's like thawing out, right? Like, we've been talking about Avatar. It's like Aang coming out of the right at the beginning. Like, oh shit, basketball is close, and guys seem safe, and like, oh shit, the NBA looks like they have their shit together. This the players are saying like, oh, this is kind of nice, and you know, they seem to be safe. Fingers crossed.
We're almost there, man. We're almost there. Stay safe out there, everybody. Please, for the love of God, stay safe out there. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.